Random House Audio presents The Triple Agent, The Al-Qaeda Mole Who Infiltrated the CIA, by Joby Warwick. Read for you by Sunil Malhotra. All warfare is based on deception. Sun Tzu. Prologue. Khost, Afghanistan. December 30, 2009. For 10 days, the CIA team waited for the mysterious Jordanian to show up. From gloomy mid-December through the miserable holidays, the officers shivered under blankets, retold stale jokes, drank gallons of bad coffee, and sipped booze from styrofoam cups. They counted distant mortar strikes, studied bomb damage reports, and listened for the thrum of Black Hawk helicopters ferrying wounded. And they waited. Christmas morning arrived on a raw wind, and still they sat. They picked at gingerbread crumbs in the packages sent from home and stared at the ceramic nativity figurines one of the officers had set up in lieu of a tree. Then it was December 30, the last dregs of the old year and the 10th day of the vigil, and finally came word that the Jordanian agent was on the move. He was heading west by car through the mountains of Pakistan's jagged northwestern fringe, wearing tribal dress and dark sunglasses, and skirting Taliban patrols along the treacherous highway leading to the Afghan frontier. Until now, no American officer had ever seen the man, this spectral informant called Wolf, whose real name was said to be known to fewer than a dozen people, this wily double agent who had penetrated Al-Qaeda, sending back coded messages that lit up CIA headquarters like ball lightning. But at about 3 p.m. Afghanistan time, Humam Khalil al-Balawi would step out of the murk and onto the fortified concrete of the secret CIA base known as Khost. The news of his pending arrival set analysts scurrying to finalize preparations. Newly arrived base chief Jennifer Matthews, barely 3 months into her first Afghan posting, had fretted over the details for days, and now she dispatched her aides to check video equipment, fire off cables, and rehearse details of a debriefing that would stretch into the night. She watched them work, nervous but confident, her short brown hair pulled to the side in a businesslike part. At 45, Matthews was a veteran of the agency's counterterrorism wars, and she understood Al-Qaeda and its caste of fanatical death worshippers better than perhaps anyone in the CIA. Better, in fact, than she knew the PTA at her kids' school back home in Fredericksburg, Virginia. Hard-nosed and serious, Matthews was one of the agency's rising stars, beloved by upper management. She had leaped at the chance to go to Khost in spite of the quizzical looks from close friends who thought she was crazy to leave her family and comfortable suburban life for such a risky assignment. True, she would have much to learn. She had never served in a war zone, or run a surveillance operation, or managed a routine informant case, let alone one as complex as the Jordanian agent. But Matthews was smart and resourceful, and she would have plenty of help from top CIA managers who were following developments closely from the agency's Langley, Virginia headquarters. Their advice so far? Treat Balawi like a distinguished guest. Matthews signed off on a security plan for the visit, though not without carping from some of the Special Forces veterans in her security detail. Her primary concern was not so much for the agent's physical safety, the men with the guns would see to that, but rather for preserving his secret identity. The CIA could not afford to allow him to be seen by any of the scores of Afghans working at the base, except for the trusted driver who was now on his way to pick him up. Even the guards at the front gate would be ordered to turn away to avoid the risk that one of them might glimpse Balawi's face. Matthews picked a secure spot for the meeting, a gray concrete building in a part of the base that served as the CIA's inner sanctum, separated by high walls and guarded by private security contractors armed with assault rifles. The building was designed for informant meetings and was lined on one side by a large awning to further shield operatives from view as they came and left. Here, surrounded by CIA officers and free from any possibility of detection by Al-Qaeda spies, the Jordanian would be searched for weapons and wires and studied for any hint of possible deception. Then he would fill in the details of his wildly improbable narrative, a story so fantastic that few would have believed it had the agent not backed it up with eye-popping proof. Humam al-Balawi had been in the presence of Al-Qaeda's elusive number two leader, the Egyptian physician Ayman al-Zawahiri, one of the twisted brains behind dozens of terrorist plots, including the attacks of September 11, 2001. And now, Balawi was going to lead the CIA right to Zawahiri's door. When the debriefing was over, a medical officer would check Balawi's vitals, and a technical team would outfit him for the dangerous mission to come. Then, everyone could relax, have a bite to eat, perhaps even a drink. And there would be a surprise, a birthday cake. The Jordanian had just turned 32 on Christmas Day, a trivia plum that Matthews had been pleased to discover. In fact, his special birth date had very nearly caused him to be named Isa, Jesus in Arabic, before his parents changed their mind and decided instead on Humam, meaning brave one. And now this same Humam was speeding toward Khost with what could well be the agency's greatest Christmas present in many a season, an intelligence windfall so spectacular that the President of the United States had been briefed in advance. As she waited for the Jordanian, Matthews's head swirled with questions. Who was this man? How did anyone get close to Zawahiri, one of the most reclusive and carefully protected humans on the planet? So much about the Balawi case was confusing. But Matthews had her orders, and she would not fail or flinch. Balawi would be given a fitting reception. There were no birthday candles at the CIA's forward base in violent eastern Afghanistan. But the Jordanian would have his cake. That is, if he ever showed up. By 3:30 p.m., the entire team was ready and waiting outside the interrogation building. Another 30 minutes dragged by without news from the Jordanian, and then an hour. And now the sun was slumping toward the tops of the mountain peaks west of Khost. The temperature dropped, and the nervous adrenaline congealed into plain nervousness. Had something happened? Had Balawi changed his mind? There were no answers, and nothing to do but wait. The group of men and women beneath the metal awning had grown to 14, an oddly large gathering for an informant meeting. Normally, the imperative to shield a spy's identity dictates that no more than two or three officers are ever allowed to see him. But as was quickly becoming clear, there was nothing normal about the Balawi case. There was a sense of destiny, of history being made, one CIA participant in the events later recalled. Everyone, the officer said, wanted to be involved in this one. Gradually, the officers segregated themselves into small groups. The security detail, two CIA employees, and a pair of guards working for the private contractor Z Services, LLC, commonly known as Blackwater, stood near the gate, talking in low voices, M4s slung over their backs. Three of the men were military veterans, and all four had become chummy. Pipe-smoking Dane Parisi, a former Green Beret and one of the oldest in the group at 46, had joined Blackwater after a career that included stints in multiple hellholes, most recently Afghanistan, where his conduct under fire had earned him the Bronze Star. Iraq veteran Jeremy Wise, 35, an ex-Navy SEAL with an infectious grin, had signed up with the security contractor to pay the bills after leaving active service and was struggling to figure out what to do with his life. Security team leader Harold E. Brown Jr., 37, was a former Army intelligence officer and devoted family man who taught Roman Catholic catechism classes and led Cub Scouts back in Virginia. Scott Roberson, 38, had been a narcotics detective in Atlanta in a previous life, and he was looking forward to becoming a father in less than a month. Nearer to the building, two men in civilian jeans and khakis chatted with the ease of longtime friends. Both were guests at Khost, having flown to Afghanistan from Jordan to be present at Balawi's debriefing. The big man with ink-black hair was Jordanian intelligence captain Ali bin Zayed, a cousin of King Abdullah II of Jordan and the only one in the group who had ever met Balawi. Darren Labonte, an athletic ex-Army Ranger who sported a goatee and a baseball hat, was a CIA officer assigned to the agency's Amman station. The two were close friends who often worked cases together and sometimes vacationed together along with their wives. Both had been anxious about the meeting with Balawi, and they had spent part of the previous day blowing off steam by snapping pictures and
Sample complete. Ready to continue?